Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Claudine.
Hello, Krista.
Yes. Nice to speak with you.
Yes, good to speak with you. I told Jessica how much I enjoy listening to some of your, tapes and interviews.
I'm really happy about that. There's a big echo on my voice, so I'm going to stop talking. Oh, is it gone? No, it's less. All right, then I will keep talking. I don't hear it anymore. It's gone. Okay, sorry. How do I send to you? Are you, why don't you talk a little bit and let's make sure that, tell me something mundane like, what time is it there?
How's the weather?
Yeah, have you had lunch yet?
Drink some water.
Yeah. We get to have a real conversation because this is not live, so just, feel free to drink water, stop if you need to. We can backtrack. Just settle in. So tell me, what time is it there? Is it before noon? Hello? Oh.
Production room, this is Steve.
Talking.
We were earlier.
Hello?
About this.
Hello?
I heard me.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I stopped. The connection was broken somehow for a minute.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Okay.
And now I hear the echo.
Yeah, it's pretty loud.
Okay. That's probably it. It's the volume in your headphones, maybe.
Okay. Maybe I could lower this.
I'm no good at making mundane conversation either.
You know what? I changed the volume from the headphone.
I'm still hearing an echo. It's a little bit less. I think the engineer maybe. Okay.
Okay.
No, it's still there. Now it's gone. Now we're fine. Can you hear me still?
I can hear you, but not very loudly at all.
Well, I don't want to be too soft in your...
I think now it's sounding fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very weak echo, but I can live with it. Yeah, that's fine.
If I lowered it, would it be better on your end?
No, I think you're okay now. I'm just going to move back from the mic a little bit. This always happens. Something always goes wrong with technology.
Technology.
Yes. I just had a conversation this morning with Patrick Bellegarde-Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like I talked to him about some of the big picture history. And you and I get to really focus on what's important to you in this, as an academic and as a person.
Okay.
So, and I did briefly get a chance to look at the readings. You know, what we usually do is decide about readings once we have edited the program and produced it. So, but I think that, I was glad to read those pages you sent anyway, because they did tell me some more about what really is important to you. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. It's just like the couple samples that Jessica sent to me.
Yeah.
There were readings in them by the people. And,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I need to send something.
Yeah. No, it's great. But we, a couple of those I think were in person, and but we often make those kinds of calls once we've got everything together. So
whatever works for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But
I did bring them in case, I needed to read something. So I may use a couple of little phrases from them.
That's fine. And so you've heard the program and I think I said this to you a minute ago, but I'm not sure you heard it because I think I went away at that point. But it really is a real conversation. And if we talk about something and you feel like you want to go back to it, it doesn't have to be especially linear. So we can really talk.
And it's not live.
It's not live. We edit it later.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and
do you tape more than what you need?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Because I think a real conversation wanders. And sometimes, it takes time to get to where we want to go. And so we absolutely will take more time. And I want to start where I just always start with people. whatever we're talking about, which is to hear something about your experience, the background of your childhood. I mean, you did grow up in Haiti, is that mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, were you raised with this sensibility of voodoo? And, you know, I'm just curious, how was that taught to you? What did it mean to you as you learned about it in those formative years?
I was born and raised in Haiti, and voodoo was not practiced in my immediate family. However, there were some older grown-ups around me in a variety of capacity who once in a while would drop some words about manger les anges and service loi, and I would ask questions.
What do those mean?
Service loi is a ceremony for the spirits,
okay.
And manger les anges, it's offerings for the angels, for the,
okay.
the spirits again. It's another name. And I had close affective ties with these particular individuals, and there were things about them that I really liked. This kind of communal emphasis, the shared food, they were very, you know, they gave hugs to people. They were, there was something about, I would say, their ethos that even though I could not put my hand on it, but that was more appealing to me than some others who might have, you know, who were maybe more detached vis-a-vis one another.
Right.
And I like that closeness. I like that humanism, even though at the time I didn't know what that was.
Right.
And I could say that I picked up bits and pieces, you know, at those very early ages. And I always wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to be an educator. And I got 2 undergraduate degrees in Haiti in education. But my favorite course at the university was a course called The Haitian Child. Mm. And for me, that context meant so much in terms of studying, you know, psychology and education in general terms. I liked the fact that it was grounded in a particular culture. And I also went at that point and got a degree in ethnology. I guess in the U.S. it would be cultural anthropology.
Right.
And that's where I studied voodoo formally at the university.
Okay.
And I felt very strongly that to be an educator, to be a teacher, I could not not know the religion, which is such an essential part of the life of my students. So that was my first encounter. And then I went to the United States and pursued graduate degree in education again and did not do any work with voodoo for about 10 years. And in 1991, I believe, I read the masterful work of Karen McCarthy Brown,
Mama Lola,
biography of mm-hmm. Mama Lola.
Mm-hmm.
And that reopened a whole new world for me. And
okay.
I saw how I could merge my work in education and morals and ethics and value and family, you know, ways of raising children. And, you know, the work that I did with voodoo. So I saw morality presented in that book, even though that wasn't Karen's purpose, but it came out and it really opened, you know, extraordinary doors for me.
What's interesting about that book, too, it's about a Haitian voodoo priestess who lives in Brooklyn. And there's an interesting dynamic between her and Karen McCarthy Brown, who is a scholar and not Haitian, an outsider, but who feels that in order to really, really understand and communicate something about the inside of that woman's life and that world, she defied some of the barriers that we might call objectivity or distance, right? Did that affect you, that stance that she took as being a scholar but also stepping inside in order to truly
Very much
understand?
So. Very much so. In fact, after reading the biography, I went back to my own work on voodoo, but it's a couple years after reading the book and going back to my work. I read a piece by Karen it was an op-ed piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education mm-hmm. on researching and writing about the other.
Right.
And it was just one page, but I must have read that page 10 times, and then I gathered the courage to call her and tell her how much her methodology had touched me and changed my life and changed the course of my research and given more meaning to some of the things that I was trying to do in terms of researching the values within Haitian families and other Caribbean contexts and also with African Americans. So very much, and her methodology, this is a very important book in the history of the study of religion in the world. As you have, you know, beautifully said yourself, the book has really changed things because Karen is a master at, you know, playing those multiple roles and exhibiting so much respect for the multiple roles of her informant. There's so much in that book. In fact, I wrote an essay on what I call the voice of Karen McCarty Brown and Mama Lola instead of the voices. And it's an essay very close to my heart. I feel that there's something there about not only maybe for Western feminists doing work on women from other non-Western background, but even for us educated academics who are entering the realm of these others who are such extraordinary people. So that's a very important book for me. And I think this, just as you said, the multiple voices of Karen, the many faceted voices of the informant, and despite the barriers with nationality, race, class, education, they keep their separate voices, but at some point we have this strong common voice which coalesce into an even stronger voice. And that voice has served Vodou beautifully. Mama Lola, whom I subsequently met through Karen and with whom I've developed very close ties myself and a lot of respect, is someone who has exhibited courage and strength. You're talking about an immigrant at a particular time frame.
Right.
She must be hitting about 70, I would say 67, 68. But when Vodou has such a negative image and no one has ever written a biography or an autobiography about, you know, I am a Vodou practitioner, I'm a priest, I'm a priestess. Right. Here comes this woman telling her story to the world and and having the strength to believe that she had a message and a story to share. There's this other essay that Karen has in the Journal of Feminist Studies of Religion called Planting Confidence in Myself, and that's a phrase from Mama Lola. And you know, that's who she is, very secure, very at ease with who she is and the message that she has to share with the world.
Right.
Planting confidence in myself. So both these women have been absolutely inspiring for my research on Haitian Vodou. And in fact, I have co-edited a volume, Spirit, Myth, and Reality, with Indiana University Press with Patrick Belgard Smith. And the book is dedicated in part to both these women.
And but I mean, that's quite dramatic what you're describing, because I mean, this is your world. I mean, Vodou is a Haitian, is you know, some call it the national religion of Haiti. I know that it's complicated because Catholicism entered Haitian history in a powerful way too, but not a mutually exclusive way. And so it sounds to me like you really, through this work, also discovered this part of your own identity in a new way. Is I mean, is that right?
It's absolutely correct. And as I said, I'm doing some other work, you know, not to mention some of my other research. But for example, I've interviewed three generations of African Americans, always about, you know, values and, you know, how do you raise your children and what are those core elements that you pass on to the next generation in terms of making sure that they are good people, that they are kind individual, that they serve others outside the immediate family. The work has been influenced without any doubt by this entire new world that I re-entered through the work of Karen Brown and Mama Lola.
You know, you use the word morality as something that struck you in the lives of voodoo practitioners in your childhood in Haiti, and that's also a word that's important in the scholarly work you do now. And I'm just curious if you could really flesh out for me how you think about morality in the context of voodoo, because it's different, right? I mean, we had this conversation with Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. I mean, it's different than, let's say, the way the word morality is used in the context of Western religion of Christianity in the United States. And he was talking about the spirits, the deities in voodoo, who are not like Catholic saints, not all good, but complicated characters, also with dark and evil, or just kind of raunchy side. So talk to me about morality as you find that manifest and expressed in this tradition in real lives.
I feel that there are multiple moralities. And in graduate school, I remember this text called Ethnic Ethics by, I believe, Antonio Cortez, which really, mock my academic work. There was this line in it about, would I steal from my dog if he were the only friend I had? And that really gives you a sense of the fact that morality is fluid. Morality is so complex, and it is not this, bipolar entity.
An either or, this or that. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. It's not black and white. Mm-hmm. So in terms of voodoo, I really feel that morality in voodoo, and the elders don't call the young children, say, come and learn about morality and civics, but it's a consciousness. It's a cosmological understanding about what's important in the world.
Okay.
And if I had to, summarize it in one word, I would say humanism. Mm-hmm. The fact that human beings are so central in this world where we live, but that we're also connected with the ancestors and the unborn, and we're connected to the forces of nature, and that's where the respect for, plants and the earth come from, which connects with Native American religions quite a bit.
Right.
This idea of this seamless cosmos. Morality is really not right or wrong. It's really about not disturbing this polyrhythm that exists. It's about balance. It's about equilibrium. It's about maintaining the flow of energy, making sure that relationships are smooth, making sure that everybody's all right, making sure that this communal spirit is applied in everyday life, that everybody is taken care of. Mm. And in a short piece that I wrote in a work that I do on a Haitian artist who has painted 130 voodoo spirits, Isabelle Jean, I have this piece about African continuity in Haitian religious life.
Right.
And there's this one example that I give. Let me see if I could think about it.
Is this artist here? Is she?
Yeah, it's here, there, uh-huh. So you might be able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But in essence, what is right in voodoo is not a function of abstract reasoning, abstract thinking. It's really relative to what will achieve unity, peace, balance for the community.
Mm.
So it's a morality very different from other forms of morality, yet we also can identify behavior in other realms which are common to other, religious persuasions. For example, all religions, advocate justice, beneficence, benevolence,
right,
forgiveness, cooperation. So voodoo is not different in that regard at all.
It's interesting because, I mean, healing is a central concept, and you use the words healing and wholeness a lot in your writing when you talk about voodoo, and I hear that in what you just said, and and those words have a lot of resonance in modern life, but they have nothing to do with the kind of Hollywood image of voodoo.
No.
I mean, and do you bump up against that as a scholar of this, and also as a Haitian, do you run up against those stereotypes?
Well, very much so. For example, you know, the very fact that I talk about humanism and morality with voodoo seems paradoxical to some, because for them, voodoo suggests, you know, many different other things, images of superstition and sorcery and blood sacrifice and orgies and, you know, all kind of malevolent things, but not at all. Voodoo is a religion of peace. And if I had to summarize it in one word, I would say it's a religion of service. And I do remember asking Karen McCarthy Brown about that. And I think she said healing. So we bump into that. We have to deal with it. And that's why we have decided, you know, as a group of researchers doing work on Haitian voodoo, to create this organization for the study of Haitian voodoo, COSANBA. It's called the Congress of Santa Barbara in April 1997. 13 Haitian scholars had a conference, The Spirit and the Reality, in Santa Barbara, and we decided to create a formal organization. The Congress of Santa Barbara, and the Creole version of it is COSANBA.
Okay.
But we've had 7 conferences, going on the 8th, which will happen in at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, in November 2nd and 3rd.
Okay.
And basically, those are the couple books that I've published with Patrick Bird Godsmith recently. The work, this new body of work, trying to not only undo those images, and we don't want to spend a lot of time on dispelling myths and misrepresentation, but the goal is more, you know what, we're going to be in your face, we're going to tell you what it is from our own perspective.
Okay.
And we have scholars doing that from, you know, perspective of literature, grassroots organizing, medicine, arts. So that's the work of the Congress of Santa Barbara.
Do you have a personal, are you a practitioner of voodoo? How does this interact with your life and your spiritual sensibility?
Well, it's an interesting question for me because...
it's a very personal question.
I was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
But I rebelled very, very early on against Catholicism. There was something I didn't like about the hierarchy. There's something I didn't like about those religious schools that I went to. There's something I didn't like about the meals that I saw some of the nuns eating at lunchtime when some of my beloved friends, you know, did not have a proper meal at the school. So very early on, and surprisingly, I guess my mother is fairly liberal. My family allowed me not to go to church and all that, but I have never been a very religious person. And even with voodoo, I see many of my coworkers, friends, researchers being more involved in terms of, you know, being initiates themselves and in terms of the actual rituals that they do at times every day. Whereas with me, I have to say that I don't do any rituals per se, but I have a love for voodoo. And I love it. I'm typically a very taciturn person, kind of shy and quiet. But when I'm at various voodoo ceremonies, I leave. I'm happy. You see a clothing that you don't see in other places. And I love those women whom I've known to, whom I've gotten to know. And I love those extended voodoo families, which are so welcoming. And so that's one level. The other level is my friends tease me. And in voodoo, people do say that some people are born initiate. I have those vivid voodoo dreams.
Right. What do you tell me about that? What do you mean by that? Tell me about one.
Well, you know about the representations of the Loire, for example, the mermaid.
Right.
I seem to have an association with the mermaid, which is interesting. I see her often in dreams. Mm. And they're always pleasant dreams. And I can't exactly recall one of them, even though my friends are telling me, you should write those down.
Right.
But, you know, there are messages being given and regular conversation. But I see those spirits in my dream. And one interesting one was, in fact, one time I had to go to a conference, but I had mixed feelings about going for some reason. And I was preparing to leave. And the night before, I had this dream where I saw the mermaid and she said, you think you're going to go to this conference? No, you're not going. I'm the one who's going to represent you. And I'm like, okay. And the following morning, for no reason, I got up. I mean, not for no reason. People do get sick. But,
right.
You know, I had this terrible flu with, you know, all kind of gastric problems. And guess what? I was not able to go to the conference. Mm. And a friend read my paper for me. And La Sirène has this this aura of, how do I say this? She's somebody that would usually get a standing ovation. People worship
right.
her, and she's gorgeous, and she's, you know. And my friend told me, it's like, I've never had a standing ovation reading a paper before. So anyway, that's one small anecdote. So I do have this very sincere love for voodoo. And I was director of the Center for Black Studies at UC Santa Barbara when we had the first voodoo conference. So I'm the one who invited those 13 scholars in Santa Barbara. And I don't like the name that they pick for the association, but that's the name that they've picked. And,
right.
you know, the people rule. But I remember at the end of the conference, I actually had tears in my eyes and shed a few tears at the podium saying how touched I was to be able to bring a part of Haiti to this campus, which had been my home for like 15, 16 years, because I did my graduate work in Santa Barbara and then I got a faculty position there.
Right.
So, you know, I was moved. I thank them for bringing voodoo to this community of scholars, which had been so welcoming to me, and bringing a part of me to them. So I have a lot of lot of love for voodoo. Mm-hmm. And I have a daughter who's a freshman in college studying comparative religion. And I would say that she might be more of a practitioner than myself.
Really?
Very mm-hmm. early on, she developed this love for religion. We were in Egypt, and that started with the Egyptian gods and all that. But I don't know if my family would necessarily be happy if my daughter became, you know, priestess or something. But I don't know. I would like it because I think she has it in her, even though I don't push her. But there's something, you know, very early on, she put a little altar. And of course, it's a very multicultural altar with, you know, Krishna and, you know, all kinds of representation from Mexico and Days of the Dead. But that's funny. It's something I've never done myself. And,
okay.
and she takes great care in taking care of.
Well, tell me about women in voodoo and what the phrase you've used, the moral authority of women in voodoo. It seems to be, gender seems to be treated very differently or to be much less relevant, let's say, than in some Western traditions that we're more familiar with in this culture.
It's true. And gender roles are much more defined in Haiti than here.
In Haitian culture?
In Haitian culture, traditionally. Mm-hmm. And Haitian women are really the pillars of society. I am not particularly proud of our men, especially the more traditional ones, because women do work, I mean, in the country. They work in the field. They work during the day. And they go home and take care of, you know, household chores and taking care of children. And they're really the pillars, the provider of this strength that mix the family. And often that's very important, especially when you have people of modest means where you don't have much in terms of material possession. So that respect for the family household, mm-hmm. for elders, for this is your petit frère, c'est petit frère, this is your little brother. This means so much, but women instill that constantly. And it happens that the rim of the national religion, Vodou, is really an arena which gives them an equal platform. Their spiritual life in itself is empowering because it's an arena where women tend to have the upper hand. We tend to have more women priests than, and we say women priests, we don't like the term priestess.
Okay.
Women priests, mambos, mm-hmm. That's the term in Haitian Creole. Than males. Women tend to go into possession, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another term that we don't like. We prefer to say that the loi mount the person.
Yes.
So it's an area where they have a lot of power. It's an area where they are allowed to fully exhibit and demonstrate their skills and leadership qualities. And it's also a kind of platform for performance, and they can act up and they can, you know, do their little
theatrical act. There's a lot of kind of physical catharsis, isn't there? I mean, it's whole body.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So in addition to being that core person in the household who transmit those values, which are so essential in society. So many websites from Haiti, if you go on, for example, the Haitian Studies Association website, which is the official organization of Haitian scholars, and scholars who are not Haitian who do study on Haiti, you will see honor, respect.
Mm-hmm.
Honor, respect. When traditionally the peasant would knock at the door and would say, honor, I honor you. And then the other person would say, respect. You know, I'm offering you respect. I'm welcoming you. So the women are the people who help carry on with that tradition of honor and respect, which is so fundamental. And on the other hand, within ceremonies and within their practice, you know, if they are a priest of the Vodou religion, they are able to really shine. And it's not an area where men would challenge them and say, you know, femme pas fait ça, women don't do this, you know.
Right. Isn't that interesting?
Femme are allowed to.
Right.
To
I mean,
do
it's interesting that the religion developed so different, you know, in contrast to the culture. I mean, I guess the religion preceded the culture too.
Yes, indeed. Huh. And, you know, and you said that you've talked to my colleague about, you know, the history and mm-hmm. how, you know, the religion came to the New World. As C.L.R. James said, you know, it was Africa reblended in the Caribbean. And it's the most important manifestation because everything else was changed. People had to assimilate. People, you know, acculturation happened. But the religion, because of its sacred nature, both during colonial time and during, you know, the time of Haiti's independence, mm-hmm. where it was not the official religion, it was seen as lesser than, which is still probably the case. It always had to be done, you know, in the secrecy of the night. It had to be done, you know, not openly.
Right.
And that has preserved some of the secrets and some of the rituals.
Okay. And and you've also said that it's been an important, an incredibly important aspect of survival for people through the hardest times, through suffering.
Very much so. Like all religions, you know, the Vodou religion is going to provide, you know, hope for the future and strength to deal with the realities of their current existence. And when you consider the harshness of what Haitians have endured, it's a system that they have devised to, you know, minimize the pain and offer, you know, a system of support and survival, mm-hmm. not only for themselves, for the immediate family, but for the larger community. There's this quote by Karen Brown where she said that a vodou is a repository for wisdom accumulated by a people who have lived through slavery, hunger, disease, repression, corruption, violence, mm-hmm. all in excess. Mm-hmm. And it's so nicely put, because unless you've been to Haiti, unless you have lived those realities, one can't really imagine the kind of hardship that, the Haitian population has had to cope with.
Right. And, you know, I think people in the United States have seen pictures of Haiti, especially when in times of unrest, have seen pictures of frightening poverty, of frightening despots, and yet, you know, I'm intrigued that you also and Karen McCarthy Brown, also this other scholar of voodoo, you know, you speak about the aesthetics of voodoo, you know, that not just of survival but of a richness. Are those pictures that don't make their way to television screens?
Haiti is a beautiful land. The environment itself is absolutely gorgeous. The blue skies that you see, you only find that in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So it's a gorgeous piece of land. There's no doubt about it. But colors are so important in the Caribbean. That's what I'm trying to say. Like the green of the leaves and the color of the sky and the bird of paradise and the bright birds and, you know, that we have and the flowers. If you look at Haitian painting, which is a very important medium of transmission of this vodou ethos. A scholar, LeGrasse Benson, who's also a member of Kosamba, was telling me that about 80% of Haitian paintings have some kind of origin in vodou.
That's interesting. Fascinating.
So there's a clear vodou aesthetics, clear, and even in other aspects which are not as apparent as the actual, you know, material artwork. Even within ceremonies, people take time to dress nicely. They try to match colors. They want things to be in harmony. And for example, the leadership style of a priestess or a priest is often defined by the style that they bring to their orchestration of the ceremony. And you'll go to many ceremonies and each person brings their own energy, their own sensibilities to, you know, that ritual, which is in essence the same, but done with so much style, with so many different personal touches. So aesthetics, arts, those are big in Haitian life and in vodou.
I wonder if there is crossover between your interest in vodou and your work in African American communities. I've understood. I mean, I know that vodou is alive in American urban centers wherever there are Haitians, and there are many Haitians in American cities. Do you see? Is vodou something that is of interest in African American communities, or do you see other similarities between religion as it developed among African descendants here and African and descendants of African slaves in Haiti?
Mm-hmm. I have not studied religion of African Americans per se. My work has been with women that I've interviewed. In fact, it's a new project, so I have not yet published too much on this. But it's my search for understanding how those core family values, which are in essence also the values of the community, are passed down to generations. You can see even a gang member or somebody who is in all kind of trouble and you say, I won't say that in front of my mama. You know, this is my mother.
Yeah.
You know, and I see that with my students. So there are common points. In fact, I have a course that I teach, the psychology of blacks, where I draw some connections between, you know, the different black population and some of those common elements. But you really, on the surface, there may not be much in common. You have to really, really go very deeply at the level of this cosmological understanding. It's like their worldview. Mm-hmm. What is the world about? What is their place in it? And what's their ultimate, you know, function as human being in terms of the time that they spend on this earth? And that's where I see the common points with Caribbean Islanders. And I've also done some work in East Africa and African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
With the Yoruba group, for example, I have not attended, you know, any of the religious gathering, but I understand that there's a whole new movement. And I know that Professor Jacob Olopuna from Harvard University is doing, you know, some very sophisticated research with this also. But there are African manifestations, and some might even say some elements which remind us of Vodou in some of the new practices in some of the black churches
right.
in the U.S.
The kind of spirit-filled worship. Is
exactly.
that what you're thinking of? That
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Among other, you know, manifestations.
What else would you like to talk about? What would you... What's meaningful for you? What would you like people to better understand in this culture about Vodou? You know, at any level, the cosmology or the way people live with it?
Maybe I will go back to how we started, mm-hmm. you know, talking about these others that people write about.
Yes.
Maybe bringing a sense to the other world, that they are not the only world, and
right.
That there are other traditions, there are other cultures where some of the traditional fundamental values about being a decent human being, you know, are still central. And when I see what's happening in the modern world with some of the youth and, you know, the degeneration of moral values and how they have disregard for peers and elders, I think that Vodou and Haitian society would have a lot to teach the world in that regard.
Say some more about that. What do you think? What are you thinking when you say that?
What am I thinking? Well, maybe those are some of my own biases.
Yeah, that's okay.
and it's not necessarily that everybody would agree. Like, some people would think that, you know, morality, for example, is, you know, this is right and this is wrong.
Right.
This is just not my own perspective. My perspective, my own sense is that... and that's where I guess I have to admit some level of spirituality. I don't know. We're on this earth for a purpose, you know, and we ought to make things better for others. Like I tell my students, you know, knowledge is of no value if we don't use it responsibly. And I feel very strongly about that, that we're not here just to, you know, have fun and, you know, go through time
right.
without leaving a positive mark. And for me, that positive mark is really this notion of service and, you know, not hurting others. And, you know, people fight. And how can you be a peacemaker instead of somebody who's carrying gossip and making other people, you know, fight more? So I feel that there are some fundamental human messages that I still find in Vodou. About respect, honor, forbearance, patience, forgiveness, tolerance, you know, respect for others, respect for little children, you know,
right.
That I still find in Vodou. And I like that. And I think that there would be a lot of lessons that more westernize, I don't even want to say Western, because even some of the Haitians and the Caribbean Islanders and the African have been, you know, have changed and forgotten about those values. And one thing, I have a book published in Haiti called The Moral and Educational Character of Haitian Vodou. And the argument that I make, and that's where I merge my background in education with the work on Vodou,
right,
where I'm making the argument that Haitian children who don't do very well typically in the school system for a variety of social reasons, you know, economic reason, issues of access and quality of the schools, but also because the curriculum is so irrelevant in terms of the Haitian realities. We're still using books from France and with that ethos from Western culture. Whereas my argument and my thesis is that our students, our children would do so much better if we use more cooperative learning methods.
Mm-hmm.
If we use some approaches in the classroom which are more in line with what they're learning at home. You may have those little kids, you know, six of them sleeping on a bed when there is a bed.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And they're sharing this and they're happy and, you know, they're a couple of buckets of water to take a bath and, you know, it's like, okay, take half, I take the other half. And then you put them in the classroom an hour later and you say, well, you can't talk to anybody.
Right.
You know? So I really feel very strongly, and a few people have said that, you know, I'm up to something with that thesis.
Okay.
That more cooperative methods, more methods based on formative feedback instead of, okay, this is not right, this is incorrect. Nothing is ever correct or incorrect, okay? What about process?
Right.
And for example, if you're in a Vodou ceremony and they're teaching you how to dance a particular, you know, dance, they're going to have a lot of patience with you. And, you know, even if you are totally off, it's like, good, come on, you're doing it,
okay,
you know? So these kinds of methods could really teach a lot,
right,
You know, in terms of, you know, having more success in the educational system. And a friend of mine, also a member of Kosamba, you know, a white scholar, was a member of our group, Nancy Michelson, was telling me that 20 years ago, she used to run an alternative high school where she was using these kind of methods. And she told me, you know, when I read your work, I couldn't believe, you know, how many common points there were in what we're doing. So in essence, what I'm saying is maybe the ethos of learning, the proper way of approaching learning is not necessarily those competitive methods and individualistic practices that so many school systems still, you know, favor.
Right.
It may be that as human beings, we like, you know, holding hands. We like, you know, literally and figuratively, we like doing things together. And that's how we're more productive.
Right. Well, is there anything else you would want to talk about Vodou?
Well, the one other thing that I would like to mention is probably the work of Erza Barjon.
Okay.
And this is an artist who recently immigrated from Haiti and lives in Miami right now. And she has painted 130 major pieces of art on what she sees as the Vodou spirits.
Oh,
as
that's
the
wonderful. Okay.
And you know, those are some of those images that you've seen. And there's a whole philosophy behind it. There's a whole aesthetics behind it. And again, if you talk yourself about, you know, the merging of Catholicism with, you know, Vodou,
mm-hmm,
people are still using images of the Catholic saints to represent those lois. And what she's bringing to the table is, you know, maybe in 50 years, maybe in 100 years, I would like to see people using these images because I've seen those lois.
Okay.
Those are the depiction. And I mentioned this because I've edited the two catalogs which have come out on her work, and I'm doing another book on the entire collection. So that's another major part of my work.
Okay.
I feel that there's a message which is quite important about, you know, offering the world images from our own aesthetics.
Right.
And versus imposed images.
That's great. And that's also something we can, you know, I think Jessica might be in touch with you about where we can find those images so that we might, if we can link to them on our website or, you know, so that people can see the images when they're also hearing.
In fact, they are linked with the Center for Black Studies webpage at UCSB.
Great.
Because Kosamba is presenting the collection. Okay, but I'm happy to, in fact, as a gift, I might send you a couple of those catalogs.
Okay, that would be great.
I think you might enjoy
that. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I know that we're on a funny schedule this summer, so it's going to be some weeks before we get to this, but Jessica's in touch with you, and I really appreciate your time, and it's just lovely to talk to you.
Well, it was a lovely conversation, Krista, and she told me she'll send me the tape when it's edited. Do you ever give the non-edited tape? Because I feel we've had a lovely conversation.
Well, I don't know if we often put unedited tape on the website as well. And
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, because this time we're doing two interviews. You know, this is a whole new world for me and for, I think, many, many listeners. And so I wanted to hear about it from a few different perspectives. And we have a website, which is just as important as the radio show. So absolutely.
Okay.
And we can talk about, we can pin that stuff down too when we get closer to the time.
Exactly. And you have my permission. Thank you,
Krista. Thank you so much.
I appreciate your time and interest in the religion.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.